Well, from national native news to Brewocracy Now on KPTZ, your community radio station in Port Townsend. This is our weekly chat with John Morrow, Port Townsend City Manager, and this is about all things Port Townsend. You can join in by clicking on the link at kptz.org. It's pinned to the top under Brewocracy Now. It's pretty easy to join the Zoom call, or you can send me an email at dj@kptz.org. Good morning, John. Oh, it's not morning anymore.
Hey, Tim. Happy top of the afternoon Thursday here for you. Good to see you again.
Good. Wow, you sound nice and clear, John. Thank you.
I do my best, but you know, sometimes I fail at that. But.
Well, I think it's the equipment, John.
Yeah, sure.
I had the opportunity to listen to the business meeting a few days ago, a marathon meeting. Actually, I was late getting into it, and it went on for quite a while. It was a marathon. I have to say, I laughed, I cried. It was so my hat's off to all the city council members, staff, and you that that dig so deep into the issues that involve us here in Port Townsend. Quite a few issues came up during that. I don't know if anything in particular strikes you as something you want to put out to the audience.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things. Thanks, Tim, before you grill me. I'm inspired that after spending so much time donating your talent to KPTZ, that you have time to listen to city council meeting. But, you know, we like to spice it up. And we actually had almost all department directors and departments represented at this last meeting. So there was a little bit of everything. We talked about everything from land use and comprehensive plan to water pipes to Uber and everything back to the budget, which was actually passed for 2021 just Monday. So it was quite a romp. I guess, you know, one thing I just want to make sure I don't fail to mention is a certain degree of excitement on two things. And I think, you know, I'll dig deep because we need a little bit of positivity and excitement these days. One is, as I mentioned in my report on Monday, we were awarded a $2.6 million grant from the state for the Discovery Road project. And I feel like I can't do one of these with you and your title of your usual show without mentioning some Discovery Road updates.
Well, thank you.
That's a really big, exciting project that now gets even better because it gives us some, you know, funding that's already been leveraged. So we don't, you know, we don't need to match it. It's basically $2.6 million of money right in to do that project on both sides of the street. And actually repair the roadway. So it's a real, hats off to the team for putting together an awesome application for that and working it through. I feel like that's a bit of good news for the city because we hear often, hey, it's expensive to fix the road. And yes, indeed it is. And so that's why, you know, the grant was an exciting development for us. The other thing is just a hats off to KPTZ, actually, because next Wednesday, the final intergovernmental collaborative group meeting, so the Port, PUD, City and County, and all 16 elected officials are meeting for the final meeting this year. And they're discussing the draft resilience and recovery plan and what might be in store for that group in the coming year. And KPTZ has decided to broadcast that to listeners at that meeting. So we're excited about that.
You know, I'm excited about that, too. And it really makes me proud to be part of this radio station because, it's hard to imagine right now what kind of local engagement would be possible without the radio station. And it was out of pure luck that we've been here for, I guess it's a long time, but it seems rather short, almost 10 years. I would like to go back for a second to Discovery Road. That is excellent news about receiving that grant. I heard something about wetland mitigation having to do with that project. What can you speak to that a little bit?
I probably don't know the level of detail that maybe some listeners want to hear, but you know, if everybody can travel in their mind down Discovery Road from the Rainier Street roundabout to Salish Coast Elementary School, I mean, that's the project that we're talking about here. And we received from federal funding for that previously. So this really, you know, just bolsters the opportunity to do a great project. obviously, you know, the roadway is limited. There's some right of way that, needs to be slightly expanded, although we can fit quite a bit in a very wide roadway. And I'm told that some of that goes through possible wetlands. So there might be a need for us to work through some mitigation of that wetland loss if we choose to have that project impact that slice of wetland. That's still to be determined on how we proceed there. Just like I'll say the design, because, you know, hand over heart, we haven't decided what that design looks like. This extra grant really gives us an opportunity to not, I'm not promising a gold-plated, you know, walking and cycling track everywhere, but it certainly gives us more options. And so I'm really excited to engage with the community, which we've done pretty well already. We've gotten quite a few surveys back, hundreds of surveys, and it just allows us to really dig deep into what that design should look like. So yeah, wetland mitigation will be a piece of that because we actually crossed through a tiny bit of wetland.
Well, another thing I gathered at the meeting was Steve King's roll-up of the project with the broken water main. And my impression of Mr. King is that he probably has those pictures hanging on his refrigerator. He is very much into the public works arena, isn't he? I'm glad that's in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this isn't really, you know, Steve's first rodeo. He's done a lot of this before, and he's seen broken pipes all over the show. So, it's also not unique to Port Townsend, although I would say our water system is relatively unique. We've got a great team, and they go the extra mile.
Another issue that came up, I guess some issues are sexier than others. A budget is notoriously unsexy. Uber. And from what I gathered at this meeting, it was put off slightly, but pretty much it's fallen on you to make the MOU, make the decisions with Uber to bring them here. Uber is notoriously aggressive when it comes to their policies and practices. I do understand that the city or you, I'm not sure which, asked for some changes to the discrimination policy that they have. You know, what creeps into my mind is, how does this work? I'm going to ask you, how does this work?
Yeah.
I
mean,
because I just see the CEO of Uber at a desk, and he's like, oh, hold on, Senator Feinstein, I have Port Townsend on the line, and this sort of thing. I mean, fill us in, the mechanics of this.
Hey, I mean, I don't want to underestimate this. I'd like to believe all the major, you know, heads of corporate titans would put the phone down to a senator to pick up a call from Port Townsend. I mean, come on, you know? I think this is maybe a little bit of a David and Goliath story. Hats off to Heidi Greenwood, our city attorney, who's been navigating this really well for us and providing some advice to city council. I think Councilmember Howard was very right to want to see the details here, because I understand that there's some concern about what this means for employees and their business practices and health insurance and the kind of the way that Uber is able to operate. So we're going to take a pause on the decision until council members have the full MOU. But here's how it essentially works and how we got it over the line, really, how Heidi did. We've been asking that, there needs to be some local oversight to how this is working. We've been asking for some time for Uber drivers to, you know, have a be licensed as a business, as a separate, a separate business, essentially, and get a city business license, also get a for hire vehicle license. And do background checks and safety inspections, and file business and occupation tax returns. So, you know, if Uber wants to say they're separate businesses, then we're going to treat them like that. And I think historically they had a hard time with that, and just said kind of did the opposite of what you said about the call to the senator. You know, they said, yeah, okay, fine, we'll just shut the app off in Port Townsend. Now, unfortunately, you know, I could see this from many sides, because I did some transportation planning in my past. And, you know, there's a whole raft of issues that come here, you know, business practices, safety, but also the fact we do have a last mile problem here. You know, how do you get around at certain hours if the buses aren't running, or if you don't have a bike or can't walk that far, don't own a car? And, you know, I do think that on the positive side, you know, I think city council has articulated this very well, that there's a real need to kind of fill that gap. And so hence us going down this direction with rideshare services, not just Uber, but to make sure that there are options out there. I do see, on the other hand, and this is just my professional opinion and not my advice to council, that there are some potential landmines with idling, with, you know, inducing travel on the road system, with parking, with congestion, and maybe safety, that we just want to make sure we navigate well. So what this proposal or this suggestion to council recommendation is to do this for a year, you know, to basically go down a path of, you know, local licensing and business licensing of Uber drivers, test it out for a year, start to marry it with our comprehensive streets program that, you know, and other things that are going to kind of be in this arena for what do we do about parking and how does it fit in with multimodal transportation choices, and then reevaluate. And, you know, to me, that's a fair go. We're going to give it a year, you know, and we'll listen to what people's experiences are. You know, unfortunately, we don't have direct control over the business practices of some companies. And so, but we can try to control the impact here locally. I were saying, no, if you're not going to let us have some local control, we're not going to change our principles. But now Uber has, and so now we could theoretically make a deal.
Well, I'm thankful for your background in the area of transportation to be able to shepherd this through. Something that just came out to me from left field, when you invite Uber in, does that mean you're inviting Uber Eats, their meal delivery service? What about Lyft? What about other companies? How does this work?
Yeah, I think I don't know that precise detail on the practices of each of the companies and what their requirements are. But this is an even playing field for the city. We have certain requirements. If they want to play by the rules, you know, get a city business license, make sure that their background and safety inspections and checks, then that would apply to anybody who wants to play. It just happens to be that the real historic challenge was with Uber saying, no, we will not play there. We'll just shut the app off. Hence us, you know, trying to work that angle first. But yeah, it would apply to any rideshare service that wants to operate in the city.
Well, and another thing that came up during that meeting that I think made me scribble down some notes was
good.
Gustafson Building. One of your staff, I can't remember whom, did mention that sounded like a fairly large development. I may have got this wrong, but I thought he said Rainier Street, but I'm not positive. What is the Gustafson Building?
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring that up. So that was Lance Bailey, our Development Services Director. That is a proposal for an apartment building. I think it's on the east side of Rainier, just south of the roundabout. And so it's actually been in the works for a little while. And I, from what I'm told by Lance, the owners there, the developers, wanted to wait until the sub-area plan was completed. Before my time, the sub-area plan for that area of Rainier Street, to take advantage of some additional density. So, you know, if you're trying to build apartments, you know, we want them to be quality. We have code, state code, local, to make sure that that's the case. But at the same time, you know, clearly we've got a housing crisis here and an affordability crisis, and in areas that are served well by infrastructure and in the right locations, you know, there's an effort to increase the opportunity for density. So the initial plans for that that building were 27 units, I believe. And since the sub-area plan rollout, now they can go up to 36 units. So they get a little extra bit density there. And they actually, they can tap into the regional stormwater system to maximize their lot area. So that system is actually something that, you know, is in progress right now, a stormwater pond that serves that region. So they're going through the design review process right now. You know, we've tried to streamline our approach. So with code amendments so that, you know, there could be an exemption for CEPA review. So, you know, I think historically, we'd have to take larger projects and run them through an additional state process. And now, because of code revisions we did in 2019, that no longer applies. It makes it just slightly easier for the project to get off the ground. And I believe it's the right location. It connects exactly to the Discovery Road conversation we just had, because that it starts right there and will deliver anybody who has children under K through six right to Salish Coast. And that whole area is hopefully coming more alive with commercial opportunities as well and job opportunities. So yeah, that's the quick rundown on that project. And we're shepherding it through, but it's really up to them to keep going through the permitting process, and we're hoping for success.
As we all are. That is an interesting spot in a city that has some interesting geography. It must be a little bit of a challenge deciding where things go in this town, I would think.
Yeah.
We have about 10 minutes left. Another thing that I'm interested in is the Adams Street issue. What is happening there? I have a little bit of background? What is that about?
I'm going to give you two for one, Adams. Okay. So first I'll answer your question, then I've got another one. The first one is when I first arrived, which seemed like several decades ago, in a completely different universe where we weren't dealing with a pandemic and all this challenge we're currently dealing with, we spent a good deal of time working through a solution for Adams Street. And for those listening, there might be some sighs I can hear through the radio waves right now. I mean, it was laborious. I'll just say, the city didn't get it right. First go, second go. But ultimately, there was a decision made by council to say, look, this street, which is sort of, I don't want to say falling apart, but in slight disrepair, there was a desire to close it. The process that was, this predates me, but the process for closing it wasn't necessarily the right way to go. That caused a lot of consternation in the community, and rightfully so. So we went back during my tenure, and the team did a great job re-engaging, getting some feedback, ensuring that we understood the public's desire and the concerns. And after that, City Council made a decision to really on the cheap, and this is a really good foresight because we didn't know we were going to get into, one of the most difficult financial years that probably most folks can remember around here, that we said for very limited funding, we're going to close the street, put up bollards, and eventually kind of recover this and maybe, in the future, make some improvements to make it part of the trail system and the non-motorized system. Well, it kind of sat there for a while. And I'll say, every time I rode or walked or drove by it, which I did several times every day because it's on my way from work to home, it hurts to see these kind of ugly barriers up there. But if you go by now, it looks better. And, it was about $2,500, which when you think about street projects and infrastructure projects, ain't that much. And we put up a very minimalist set of bollards that were locally made, and a little bit of staff time in addition to that cost. And what it does is it looks a lot nicer, and it allows us to kind of close the book on that chapter of Adams Street. Now in the future, if we want to look at that for improvements or plantings or really to add some benefits to it, because it is actually a very convenient corridor for people on walking and biking. Then council and city and public works can go that direction. But for now, that long saga that began when I started is now over. And luckily so. The second Adams Street, I'll give you a second Adams after you comment. Sorry, Tim.
No, I'm glad to see you had a big smile when you said it's over, because I have a feeling that nothing is ever over.
Oh, I know. I said that kind of a little tongue in cheek. I mean, that's the great thing about this is that I really enjoyed, my realization. And I think I said this during Adams Street. It's quite clear people care about this place. And that comes through because things that in other places might be deemed small scale or not as important, they have value, they have meaning. And I just love how this the community is really connected to place, and rightfully so, they should be. Each little decision actually is a statement of our values. And I believe we made a incorrect statement first, and then we kind of recorrected that. And I think it's a better statement now.
Well, very good. If you are just tuning in, you are listening to John Morrow, Port Townsend City Manager. And we're talking about all things Port Townsend. We have just a few minutes left, but you are welcome to send in any questions very easily. You can do that to DJ@kptz.org, and it comes up right in front of me in real time. So now's your chance to ask those questions. Part of what we'd like to do here is rumor control. In the age of social media, there are many. We're an engaged city. We follow things that are happening here, and sometimes opinions that are put out on social media may not always be correct. Mm. But this in real time is the way to take care of that.
Yeah.
Now, with that, John, we just have a few minutes. Is there another subject that you would like to bring up, maybe for discussion next week, or
maybe something to ponder? I mean, I had a 2-for-1 Adams, and I'll give you the second Adams, and it was the fact that I know that there is a council member with last name Adams, Pam Adams, who's listening right now as she diligently does every week. So I just wanted to give her a thanks for that, and also for her leadership as one of the city council members here. And note that, you know, amongst their duties, city council, you know, this, if you're not paying attention to the number of meetings and committees and boards and commissions, you know, it might be lost on the community how hard these folks work, including Pam. So she's chairing a meeting tomorrow of the Lodging Tax Advisory Commission, LTAC, to walk through revenue from LTAC, which has been deplorable this year, and a plan for next year's budget. So that's, you know, that's one reason why Pam and I were talking this morning, but it gave us an idea. And I think Pam said that I could kind of shoot this out there. You know, it'd be really nice. I love the idea of connecting in person, and it's been really painful not to actually physically interact with people in the community that I now love and call home. And that will come back. Dr. Locke says all pandemics end, and this one will end too. But it gave me a thought that maybe occasionally bringing a city council member on with me could be a really great way for the community to engage with their elected officials, you know, and Pam said she was up for it. So maybe at some Thursday we can have a call in or a Zoom in from a number of the city council, and we can tag team that.
I think that's an excellent idea, because it is always interesting to talk about these issues that pertain to us here in Port Townsend. But our elected officials, you know, I don't run into them very often, especially lately. You don't run into these folks on the street, and I would love to hear the background on and their opinions about what is going on in the future of Port Townsend. So let's do that.
Yeah, great. And I don't want to make it a requirement, because, you know, they're quite busy. I'm sure if we try to get Mayor Sandoval at this time, she's probably booked for 3 meetings at the same time, you know. But you know, let's roll some of our elected members here, because they really do a thankless job, and they do it really well. So I think it's important for them to have a conduit to questions and to be able to get to know the community that they represent better.
And I second that, John Morrow. Yeah, we're out of time.
Okay.
And I appreciate it, as usual, your candid thoughts, and we will check back with you next year, just letting everybody in the audience know if you have questions, DJ@kptz.org, or you can join in the conversation every Thursday. Thank you, John Morrow.
Always a pleasure, Tim. Take care.
Okay. Thank you.